So let's complete this brief summary of multivariate calculus. We discussed differentiability together with clearly first order derivatives, directional derivatives, and so on. Today I want to speak very briefly of second order derivatives. Okay? So the framework is always the same. We have a function f from Rn to R. Okay? And let's suppose that this function has directional derivatives, let's say in every direction, at each point, everywhere. Okay? So when I take a directional derivative, let's say with respect to a direction d, which means that this limit exists. Okay? At any given x. As I already told you last time, we can consider this directional derivative as a function, okay? As a function that at each x in Rn associates the value of the directional derivative. Okay? So if we want here to x, we associate the directional derivative of f with respect to the given direction d at the point x. Okay? So we see the directional derivative as a function. And once again, it is a function from Rn to R. Exactly like the original function. Okay. Okay, we need to suppose that the derivative exists at each point, or as we will see in a moment, at least in a neighborhood of a given point. Okay? Well, somehow we can try to consider the directional derivatives of this function. Okay? The directional derivatives of the directional derivative. Okay? And so we could consider the directional derivative of this function in the direction d exactly through the very same definition. So this is the limit for t that goes to zero of the function, which is the derivative of f with respect to direction d, computed at the point x plus t times d, minus the function, which is the directional derivative, computed at x, divided by t. Okay? Simply replace the function with this other function. Okay? If it exists, this is called a second order directional derivative. For the time being, well, okay, directional derivative at the considered point in the directions d and b. Okay, for the moment, the order you considered is relevant. Okay, because here you make the derivative with respect to b of the derivative with respect to d. Okay.
There should be a B in the formula.
Where?
Or B. Why there is B? If the direction is B.
No, sorry, sorry, you're right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Clearly, B is here. Okay, I will just focus on the case in which these two are partial derivatives. So the directions we consider are just the directions of the canonical basis. Okay? So that this will be somehow the directional derivative with respect to some direction x I of the directional derivative with respect to xj of s. Okay? I will focus just on this one. Standard this notation is a bit heavy. Okay? The standard notation you find in textbooks is this one. Rather than repeating the symbol partial twice, you put a square. Okay? And here you put a square with respect to x1 and x2. So this is the standard notation for this directional derivative. Okay? So, we will say that a function f has second order partial derivatives when the function has partial derivatives, okay, and the partial derivatives admit have partial derivatives as well. Okay? We will say that the function f has partial derivative at a given point, so we will say that f has partial derivative as, sorry, second order partial derivative at the given on f, if f has partial derivatives, the first order partial derivatives at any x which is in a small enough neighborhood of the given point, and furthermore, the partial derivatives have partial derivatives as well. Just to give you a detail, here I ask the existence of the partial derivatives in a neighborhood of the given point, okay, in such a way that as a function the partial derivative is defined in a neighborhood of the point. Because if the partial derivative exists just at the point, I cannot see the partial derivative as a function, okay, because it exists just at the point. To consider it as a function, it must exist at least in a neighborhood of the point, since we are taking limits as t goes to zero, okay, this guarantees that limit means t is, at least t is small enough. So, it guarantees if here we take x bar, t it guarantees that this point is inside the ball, so that this quantity is well defined. Okay? But if you don't want to deal with a single point, imagine partial derivatives everywhere. Okay, let me give you another notation. So this is the standard notation for the second order partial derivatives. If E is equal to J, so you are taking the same partial derivative twice, the notation gets simplified, no, really not simplified, changed, yes, a bit simplified this way. Okay? It's a notation. It's a name. It's somehow a name. Okay. D squared here doesn't mean it means exactly the idea. You take this twice. Okay. Doesn't have to deal with the square of the variable. But it's a standard notation. Okay. Well, you can. We can make a simple example. And I will use the same function I used the other time. Which was the sign of p times x times x1 times x2. You remember, I took a function of two variables. So x is a pair x1, x2, and the function was this one. Okay? We computed the partial derivatives as an exercise, and the partial derivatives were these two. Okay. What does a second order partial derivative mean? Means that we take the partial derivatives of this function. Okay? So we have n is equal to, we have four second order partial derivatives, okay? Generally you have n first order partial derivatives and n squared second order partial derivatives. Okay, let's for instance take the partial derivatives of this one with respect to x2, okay? This means, so let's use the right, the simplified notation. This is the derivative with respect to x1, now I take the derivative with respect to x2. The practical way to do this is consider x1 as a parameter, as a fixed parameter, and take the derivative with respect to x2. This is a product, so we must do the derivatives of the product, so it's the derivative of this times this, plus this, times the derivative of this. So this goes to be P, when you take the derivative with respect to x2, and then the cosine remains here, plus, now we take this part as is given, and we do the derivative of this. The derivative of the cosine is minus the sine, so here we have a minus the sine, and then we must take the derivative of the argument. So, derivative with respect to x2, so x1 is fixed, the derivative with respect to x2 of the argument is p times x1, so another p squared x1. Okay? In the same way you could do the derivative with respect to x1, of the derivative with respect to x1, Okay, I don't do the computation. And here you take the derivative with respect to x2. You can do the derivative with respect to x1 and the derivative with respect to x2. Okay? I don't make the computations. Well, no, let's compute this one. The derivative with respect to x1 of the derivative with respect to x2. Okay? When I take the derivative with respect to x1 of this part, I get p times the cosine. I get exactly this. When I do the then I keep this fixed. I do the derivative of this second term. It gets minus the sine of the argument times the derivative with respect to x1. So it remains p x2. And so it's p squared x1 x2. It is exactly this one. The two derivatives are equal. Okay? In this example, the two derivatives are equal. Is this just a lucky coincidence, or it is a general property? Well, it is a general property as long as the derivatives are continuous functions. Okay? So, there's a theorem. You choose what, once again, which states the following. Let's consider a point in a range. And let's suppose that f has the second order partial derivative let's j just for a pair of indexes for x I and x j. Sorry, I said the pretty wrong thing. Suppose that as the partial derivative at any point x in any neighborhood of x bar. Okay. So for a pair of index, you take the derivative with respect to xj and then the derivative with respect to x1. And then you take the derivative to xi and then with respect to xj. They both exist, and they exist at any x which is close enough to x bar. Okay? So this is what I told you wrong earlier. It's not true that it is enough that these are continuous. If these are continuous, okay, the second partial order derivative exists, and they are both continuous at x bar, then they are equal. Okay? So if the two derivatives, if both the second order partial derivatives are continuous at x bar, then they are equal. Okay? So, you can check that this is a continuous function, okay? So, the two derivatives have to be equal. Well, somehow you must know the derivatives to apply this result. So this is once again a theoretical result, okay? If you have some a priori information that tells you that the function has continuous second order partial derivatives, you know that they are equal, okay? Otherwise, to check, you must know the derivatives. And so you check it directly, actually. But this is important from a theoretical point of view, because from time to time we will suppose that a function has second order derivatives and the second order derivatives are continuous. Okay? And we will apply and prove convergence of results for that kind of functions. Okay. Relevant concept now, the action. The action of a function f that has second order partial derivatives is a matrix, is the matrix whose entries are the second order partial derivatives. So, suppose that f has second order partial derivatives, the action of F is this square matrix. First entry is the directional derivative, sorry, it's the partial derivative with respect to x1 twice. The second is the partial derivative twice with respect to x1, x2, at the considered point. The last element of the first row is the partial derivative with respect to x1 of the partial derivative with respect to x1, and so on until the last row where you have the partial derivative with respect to xn of the partial derivative with respect to x1 until the last element is the partial derivative with respect to xn plus. Okay. Essentially,
the first one is slides in the direction of one.
Yes. Essentially, the first column are the partial derivatives of the derivatives with respect to x1. Okay? The second column is the partial derivatives of the partial derivative with respect to x2 and so on. Okay? Or if you want to see in another way, the rows are the partial derivatives with respect to x1 of the partial derivative of all the partial derivatives. Okay? And the second row is the partial derivative with respect to x2 of the all the partial derivatives and so on. Okay? The usual notation, and we will use this a lot, for this matrix is nabla square f at x bar. Okay? And this is an n by n matrix. Okay? Okay, let's suppose that all these partial derivatives are continuous. All these second order partial derivatives are continuous. According to the theorem, this value is equal to this value. This value here is equal to this value here, and so on. So what type of matrix is this? Come on. Yeah. So, if the second order partial derivatives are continuous, this is a symmetric matrix. Okay? And what is a good property of symmetric matrices related, let's see, to their eigenvalues? Yeah. The eigenvalues of a symmetric matrix are all real numbers. Okay? The eigenvalues are real, so if we have enough continuity, continuity of the derivatives, continuity of the second order partial derivatives, this matrix is symmetric and has real eigenvalues, and this will be relevant, as we will see in a couple of weeks. Indeed, we can go a bit farther, giving a more general definition than the one given implicitly by the Schwarz theorem. Okay, so a function f is called twice continuously differentiable if the function has second order partial derivatives at each point in a neighborhood of the considered point, and the second order partial derivatives are continuous at the given point. So, I write it, f is called twice continuously differentiable at a point x bar in Rn if f has second order partial derivatives at any point which is in a close enough to x bar, so there is in a ball of center x bar a radius epsilon for some epsilon. And second property, the second order partial derivatives are continuous at the considered one. So, their existence in a neighborhood is needed to consider the second order partial derivatives as functions, and we ask them to be continuous at the point. Okay? So, we will mainly deal with functions which are continuously differentiable, okay, which we know what it means, and functions which are twice continuously differentiable. Okay? We will see that there are some optimality conditions which need the function to be differentiable, continuously differentiable, and optimality conditions which will require the function to be twice continuously differentiable, and we will see different algorithms for these two types of functions. Okay? We already said this, and it follows once again by the definition. If a function is twice continuously differentiable at a given point, its Hessian matrix at that point is symmetric and therefore has real eigenvalues. Okay? How we are going to use twice continuously differentiable functions? Okay? We have second order Taylor formulas. So now suppose. Okay, that F is continuously differentiable. Once again, when I say nothing, it means it is continuously differentiable at every point. Okay? Or if I say it is twice continuously differentiable on a set, it means that it is twice continuously differentiable at every point of that set. So, let's suppose for the sake of simplicity that it is twice continuously differentiable everywhere. Okay. So it means at every point of our range. Okay. Given any x bar, we have these two Taylor formulas, which hold for every vector v. So the first one is for each v in a rank, f at x plus v is equal to f at x bar plus the gradient of f at x bar times v plus 1 half v times the Hessian matrix of f at x bar times v plus some residual function r, which has this property. It goes to zero faster than the square of the norm of v. If you remember the first order Taylor formula, the residual was going to zero faster than the norm. Okay? Here the residual is going to zero faster than the square of the norm. And second Taylor formula, which means that we erase, we don't have a residual, but we compute the Hessian matrix not at x bar, but in a point on the segment between x bar and v. So the formula is roughly the same, but we don't have any residual, and the Hessian matrix is computed. So, for each v, there exists a value t between 0 and 1 such that. Okay? What's not like? Okay? This means, okay, you don't want a residual, you want an exact formula, you have to compute the Hessian matrix, not at x bar, but on a point on the segment between x bar and v, okay? For t equals 0, this is x bar, for t equals 1, this is v, and for t between 0 and 1, it describes this vector. Okay? Exactly as it were for the, sorry, exactly as it was for the mean value theorem, the weak point is that we don't know this point. Okay? We don't know which point to take on the segment. Okay? You prove there exists one, but you don't know which one it is. Okay? So the practical use of these formulas is this one. Okay? First order case, you said, okay, if v is close to 0, or analogously, if we take v to be x minus x bar, so this becomes f at x, this is f at x bar plus this scalar product here, plus now this term here. And I'm just writing the same. If x is close enough to x bar, the residual should be negligible, should be very small, and this function here should somehow approximate the value of f at x. So my question is, what kind of function is this one? Or equivalent, what kind of function is this one? Okay. When we were doing the first order Taylor formula, we did not have this term, and this was a linear term plus a constant value, so it was an affine function. Okay. Now we have this term. Okay. In these terms, the variables, if you compute it, this is the sum over I from 1 to n, or the sum from j from 1 to n of the partial derivative with respect to xj and xi computed at x bar times xi xj. No, sorry, it's b. So it's vi dj. These are second order terms. Okay? If I is equal to j, this is a square, otherwise this is the product of two variables. Okay? So I have linear terms plus quadratic terms. Okay. This is a quadratic function. Okay. So this second order Taylor's formula is telling you if I'm close enough to the point, I can approximate the function with a so-called quadratic function. Okay. A function which is in the variable as linear and quadratic terms. And these are the coefficients. The Hessian matrix provides the coefficients of the quadratic terms. More in general, a function is called quadratic if it has this form. Let's say a function q is quadratic if it is this kind of function from Rn to R. One half x times q times x plus, let's say, b times x plus c, where q is an n times n matrix, b is a vector in Rn and c is a number. Okay? Indeed, this function here is of this type as a function of b. This is b and this is q and this is c. Okay? If you use the other formula, you have to do some algebraic passages to get c. Okay? Because the linear b will be that and q will be this one. All the same. All the same. So these type of functions are called quadratic functions. Without any loss of generality, you can suppose Q to be symmetric. Why is this one? Why is this true? Because all these terms, there will be, for instance, Qij xij plus Qji xj xi. But these two are equal. Okay? So you can write this as in this way, qi plus qij plus qji up times xi xj plus qji plus qij xj xi divided by 2. Okay? You replace each of them by their by half of their sum, and the quantity is exactly the same. Okay? And these two coefficients are equal. So if you have a quadratic function where Q is not symmetric, the same function can be expressed replacing Q by this matrix. Okay? Try it. You replace to Q this one, you will get exactly the same sum. So without any loss of generality, we can suppose Q to be symmetric, like it is here in our Taylor's formulas. Okay? Our Q is the Hessian matrix and it is symmetric. So the core there is telling you that we can approximate through Taylor's formulas a quadratic function. We can approximate a function through Taylor's formula both through a linear function or through a quadratic function if we have second order partial derivatives. Just give me a couple of minutes to show you a picture. And then we are done for now. May I take it down? Però non sta riconoscendo. Okay. This is exactly the same example I showed you the other day. N equal 1. Okay? and I consider the point x equal 1. I computed the first order scalar formulas. I did not consider the residual. And you were getting that line as an approximation. Okay? Now do all the computation with the second order derivatives. The original function up there is a polynomial. Okay? So it has all the derivatives you want. Okay? Very nice function. You replace, so you develop second order Taylor's formula, you compute the second order terms, you ignore the residual, and you get this other function, the red one. Okay? Which provides a better approximation when you are very close to the point. Okay? And then you could do this also for second order functions, and what you get, okay, this is what we've seen the other time. Okay, you do the second order approximation. You remember the function was done this way, I made approximation in 0, 0, and what I get as approximation is this function here. Okay? Which gives a better representation, because you remember when you had the plane was horizontal. Okay? Well, this is following the shape of the function meaningfully better in this example. Okay? So I think this is all we need about calculus. So now we take a break, and then Professor Bidilacqua will continue the lecture.